We have divided the course into 18 lessons. They're called lessons. And in each class, we'll cover so many verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita, which you should read the night before. And from time to time, I may give some written homework or a pop quiz. You know what a pop quiz is? It means a quiz that is not announced before, just to make sure that you're reading and remembering. So we can pass these out. You pass to the men there. Someone can get one of the ladies to pass. Yes? Yes, now we don't have enough copies. I'll give you one, my copy. And Braja Bihari said that until he makes more photocopies, that you can read from Chaitanya Charitamrita in the VIHE library. There may be more than one subject covered in each class, but the main subject or theme has been mentioned on the paper. Some devotees asked about taking notes, which I think is an indirect way of asking about the exam. And the answer is that yesterday's class and today's class may involve more points which are not included in the reading. And I will tell you specifically if there's something that you should know from the discussion which is not in the book. But everyone should note the sentence that's been written on the board. Jiver Swarupai Krishnar Nityadas. That is the essence of Sambandha Gyan, that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. And everyone should know what is Sambandha Gyan, what is Abhideya, and what is Prayojan. Sambandha means relationship. And in our case, it means our relationship with Krishna, that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. Abhideya means the process, and the process is bhakti or sadhana, bhakti. And prayojana means the end or the goal, which is prema or prema bhakti. And today we will discuss in detail about what is bhakti, based on the verse Anyavilasita Shunyam. which is in the first page of the photocopied material. And you should know the Sanskrit and the translation, and you should actually know what each word means and be able to explain the significance of each word as per the discussion. I would also like to apologize to the senior devotees, because yesterday when I asked questions, they raised their hands and I didn't call on them. But I thought, according to Vaishnava etiquette, I should call on them rather than the junior devotees. But to encourage the junior devotees, I called on them instead. So I hope I didn't commit any offenses. But I saw them more as teachers rather than students. So now, before we begin every day, we'll recite one mantra from Chaitanya Charitamrita to offer respects. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
So we'll return to the verse Anya Vilasita Sunyam. In every definition in Vedic literatures, there are two parts. One is called Swarup Lakshana, and the other is called Tatastha Lakshana. Swarup Lakshana means natural characteristic, which is intrinsic. And Tatastha Lakshana means marginal characteristic, which is manifest under certain conditions, but not always manifest. So here, the Swarup Lakshana is Anukulena Krishna Anushilana. This is the intrinsic characteristic of Uttama Bhakti. So Krishna here means what? Krishna means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and the expansions of Krishna, and things related to Krishna, like the devotees of Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that all of the 64 items of devotional service also can be rendered to devotees. And Anukulyena means favorable. And we discussed two criteria of favorability. One is that the performer's attitude should be favorable to Krishna's, to pleasing Krishna. He should not have any hostility towards Krishna. And therefore, demons like Kamsa, Jarasandha, Shishupal, Dantavakra, and 18 other demons who tried to kill Krishna. Although Krishna might have been pleased to fight with them, experiencing virya ras, or chivalrous relationship. But because they were hostile to Krishna, they were not favorable to Krishna, they're not considered devotees, and their fighting with Krishna is not considered bhakti. And the other criteria should be that Krishna is actually pleased. If we try to serve Krishna whimsically or independently, not following the scriptures or the spiritual master, even though we think that we want to please Krishna, but actually Krishna may not be pleased. There was one rich man in Bombay, one of the three richest men in India. And he was known as a great Vaishnava. And when I met him, he was boasting about his Krishna consciousness. And he took from his pocket one beautiful little silver box. And he opened it up and he showed me that it was full of tulsi leaves. And he said, "I don't even take tea without adding tulsi." So this is not favorable. He's not serving Krishna as Krishna wants to be served. So we have to know how Krishna wants to be served from the spiritual master and from the Vedic literatures. Now, coming to Anushilanam. Anushilanam, shilanam means activity, and anu means continuous. So anushilanam means continuous activity or cultivation. And Srila Prabhupada and other acharyas have explained that the cultivation can be done positively or negatively. Positively means there are certain things that we must do. And negatively means there are certain things that we must not do. So when we see the first 20 items of devotional service, the first 10 are do's, things that we should do. And the next 10 items are don'ts, or things that we should not do. And Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas have also explained that such activities will involve the body, the words, and the mind. Both categories of do's and don'ts will engage the body, words, and the mind. Now here, another interesting question comes. We find that Lord Chaitanya had one devotee who was court physician. And he once saw a peacock feather. And seeing the peacock feather, he experienced some sort of transcendental ecstasy and fell down, became unconscious, or externally became unconscious. Now, what happened to him, and is it devotional service? Any ideas? This is a difficult one, so senior devotees can.
Yeah. He was fanning a king. No, he was administering mass, and the king, and someone was fanning the king with a peacock. So it wasn't like, although that was his occupation.
I'm not talking about the fanning, I'm talking about the fainting.
Yeah. So that's a symptom of ecstasy and love of God, instead of service to Krishna.
Yeah.
Correct. Remembrance of Krishna, or meditation on the pastimes of Krishna, and ecstasy that one experiences while meditating on the pastimes of Krishna, are not performed with the body, words, or mind. They exist on another platform altogether, purely spiritual platform. But they are also included in bhakti. Although general definition for sadhakas means devotees practicing devotional service, sadhana. For sadhakas, devotional service is performed with the body, words, and mind. But for siddhas, or perfected souls, they always meditate on the pastimes of Krishna. And meditating on the pastimes of Krishna, they experience transcendental ecstasy, which is beyond the body, words, and mind. And that is also included in Anushilana. These are advanced stages. And I actually wanted to recommend that you all study two verses that come at the end, because they will help you to understand the discussions throughout the course. And they are the verses beginning Ado Shraddha Tita Sadhu Sangha. Texts 14 and 15 in chapter 23. Because we should have some sense of the various stages in devotional service. And we should understand what symptoms apply to what stage. So, when Sanatana Goswami inquired of Lord Chaitanya, he inquired about sadhana and sadhya. Sadhya means the goal or the end, and sadhana means the means or the process by which we can attain the goal. So, bhava and prema are considered sadhya. They're the goal. When one comes to bhava, there's no more sadhana, no more practice. But everything is done by the internal potency. So later we'll get to the complete discussion of sadhya bhakti, which includes bhava and prema. But we should know at least that that is the goal, and when one reaches the stage of bhava, there's no more sadhana. There's no more sadhana. And sudasattva visheshatma, the swarup lakshana, or natural characteristic of bhava bhakti, is it is completely transcendental to the material modes. It is on the platform of pure goodness. That means it's beyond the material body and mind. But still it is bhakti. Now, well, when we come to that part, you'll have to memorize it for the exam. But now I'm not asking you to know it for the exam, but I'm asking you to know it so that you can follow the discussions better. You should know what the various stages are from Shraddha to Prema, because we'll refer to them throughout the discussions. Now, Anyabhilasitam. We left off with Anyabhilasitam. And I explained the difference between Anyabhilas, which means no other desire, and anyabhilasita, which means that one is not habituated to any other desire. But in some extreme circumstances, if one is threatened with life or death, he may pray to Krishna, please save me. But in such extreme cases that are beyond the devotee's control, if the devotee prays to Krishna for relief or salvation, it does not become an obstacle to uttama bhakti. It is not an obstacle to uttama bhakti. He can go on with uttama bhakti and continue to make progress. But if someone has, even in ordinary circumstances, if someone wants something material from Krishna, that is against uttama bhakti. And he will not be able to make good progress. Now here, another question arises, that we are practicing devotional service, sadhana bhakti, but we have desires. We want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. We want to attain some higher stage of bhakti. So is that anyabhilasita sunyam? In other words, we are practicing bhakti. Why? Because we want to attain bhakti. So there's no desire other than bhakti. Bhakti means to please Krishna. So therefore we say that in bhakti, the means and the end are the same. The means is bhakti and the end is bhakti. But the means is sadhana bhakti and the end is sadhya bhakti. So if a sadhaka wants to attain sadhya, there is no fault. In fact, he should want to. Otherwise, we may come in niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means following the rules and regulations without knowing the purpose. But there's a purpose. And when we come to the definition of sadhana bhakti, it's right in the definition of sadhana bhakti. Practices that awaken bhava bhakti. So if we're engaged in sadhana bhakti and we don't reach bhava bhakti, then we're not even really practicing sadhana bhakti, because sadhana bhakti is supposed to awaken bhava bhakti. So if we're just following various practices without knowing the goal and without wanting to reach the goal, then that is also not complete. It is like niyamagraha. Just doing for the sake of doing without knowing why. We should know that there is some goal. We should be able to see where we are in relation to the goal, and we should want to make progress. Of course, we don't make progress just by our own endeavor. Actually, we make progress by Krishna's mercy and Vaishnava's mercy. But we have to make efforts and at the same time pray for mercy. So we'll discuss that more later. Then janma jnana karmadi anavritam. We discuss this also, but we can consider some practical applications. Jnana means knowledge. And empiric knowledge or speculative knowledge are not helpful. But knowledge of Krishna from the scriptures and saints are helpful. They are accepted as bhakti. And karma means activity. So worshipping the deity is also accepted in the process of devotional service. But there are other activities, like fruitive activities, Vedic sacrifices or rituals, which are meant for material elevation, which are not part of bhakti. Now, every good Hindu son is expected to perform the funeral rites of his father. So in case his father got some low birth, he can be elevated. If his father became ghost, he can be delivered. So this comes in the category of Vedic rituals, not bhakti. And now suppose my father dies, and I'm expected to perform the funeral rites. What should I do? And if I perform the funeral rites, is it bhakti?
You should perform the rites, but not think that bhakti is dependent on the rites.
Why should I perform?
Just for social peace. Keep peace in the family.
Very good. If I think that if I don't perform my father's funeral rites, that I will commit some sin or some offense and I will suffer, that is against bhakti. Or if I think that by performing my father's funeral rites, I will get some good karma, and by good karma I will get bhakti, that is also against bhakti. If I think that I have something to lose if I don't do it, that is wrong. Because bhakti is not, as you said, bhakti is independent. It cannot be obstructed by lack of material karma, and it cannot be furthered by performance of material karma. So if I think either way, that if I don't do it, I will lose, and if I do it, I will gain, then that means I haven't appreciated the independent nature of bhakti, which is expressed as anyavilasita sunyam, jnana karmadi anavritam. Adi means etc. You know etc.? That means yoga, vairagya, tapasya, so many other processes. Bhakti is not dependent on any of them, but to the contrary, if bhakti is mixed with any of them, bhakti becomes weakened. So, but if I think that if I don't perform my father's funeral rites, people will criticize. They will think, oh, he's a devotee, and look at him, he didn't even do his father's funeral rites. Then, taking into consideration popular sentiment, we can do it. One devotee in Bombay asked Srila Prabhupada that if a devotee sees a man drowning in the river, should he save him? And Srila Prabhupada replied that actually we have no business saving a drowning man. We have no business interfering with the reactions of people's actions. In other words, we have no business interfering with material affairs, karma and the reactions to karma. Then Srila Prabhupada said, but if we don't save him, then people will criticize that, oh, he's a devotee, he could have saved the man, but he didn't save him. What kind of a devotee is he? So that is called loka vichar, which means public sentiment, popular sentiment. That sometimes we do things that are not included in devotional service, but in consideration of loka vichar, we can do them. On the top floor of a burning building. and the devotees were working on the Rath cart beneath the burning building. So they held out the canopy of the chariot under the window, and they told her she should jump.
There were five of them.
Huh?
Five ladies.
Oh, five ladies. So they all jumped and they were saved. And then there were headlines in a newspaper with pictures how the devotees had saved the ladies from the burning building. And they especially appreciated the fact that we used the sacred canopy to do it. So this, and then Srila Prabhupada told his secretary to send me the clippings from the newspapers and say that I should approach all big people of Bombay and show them that we're doing the best welfare work. Spiritually and materially. So that is, in that way, we can do something which is not really one of the items of devotional service for the sake of making people favorable or for the sake of avoiding criticism so that ultimately we can preach.
Sometimes we hear, like in Krishna, that Prabhupada says that due to the pious activities, that these saints and sages could break this coward's lips. So what kind of pious activities is that? Because that goal is...
Yes, that we will discuss in detail. But in brief, the pious activity mentioned there is none other than devotional service. None other than devotional service, not material pious activity. And specifically it means serving pure devotees. Especially it means serving pure devotees.
Kapiladi had told his mother that devotional service is divided in three parts: the mood of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So, bhakti is spiritual, like Krishna is transcendental. So, how can bhakti be transcendental?
We have a question.
He says that Lord Kapila tells his mother Devahuti that devotional service can be performed in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion, or in the mode of goodness. How then is devotional service transcendental? Srila Prabhupada has given the example that a person is riding in a boat and there's some storm. So the boat may rock, you know, this way and that way. But because he's in the boat, he's not touched by the water. So, by the example, Srila Prabhupada meant to indicate that the devotee who's in the boat of devotional service cannot be contaminated by the modes. But if he's not expert, he cannot manage the boat in such a way that it doesn't rock. It still rocks due to material influences. But because he's in the boat of bhakti, he's not touched by the water. That means he's not contaminated by it. You understand?
I think also in the teachings, Kapila, it doesn't just divide bhakti into those three divisions, but then the next verse describes pure devotional service, which is untinged with those three. So he actually elucidates that point.
But that's the stage of bhava. Sudhasattva Visheshatma. But even before the stage of bhava, when we're rendering sadhana bhakti, it's not that the service that we render is contaminated. We may not be completely free from the influence of the modes, but the service is not contaminated. The service is pure as long as it comes in the definition, anya vilasita sunya. Now, what is the symptom that one's service is not affected by, or not covered or obscured by karma or jnana? Rupa Goswami has explained yukta vairagya as opposed to falgu vairagya. Yukta vairagya means that the devotee sees that everything is Krishna's property, and therefore he sees that it is meant to be used in Krishna's service. And if it can be used in Krishna's service, he accepts it. And if it cannot be used in Krishna's service, he does not touch it. Like the Bhagavad Gita says that the yogi is like a tortoise. He can extend his limbs when there's need, otherwise he withdraws his limbs within. And phalga vairagya means that not knowing the relationship of so-called material things to Krishna, that I reject them. Phalga refers to one river in Bihar, which looks like sand, but it only looks like sand. Underneath there's water. So the impersonalists who artificially renounce, they're like the Falga River, in that they look like they're dry, no material desires. But if you poke your finger under the surface, there's so many currents of desire. So Yukta Vairagya means appropriate renunciation. And that is the symptom of Uttama Bhakti. And trying to enjoy something for sense gratification or reject something that could be used in Krishna's service are indications of being covered by karma, if we want to enjoy, or jnana, if we want to renounce something that can be used in Krishna's service. So we have to follow bhakti. Sometimes we don't know. Sometimes we think, I need this for my service, but we're not sure, do I really need it, or do I just want it for my senses? So there, one can consult with other devotees and see if they think that that you really need it for your service, or if you really don't need it for your service, but your mind is just telling you you need it so that your senses can get some extra gratification. So are there any questions?
The last statements about Nyukten causal karma, they're answering the question. Which question?
Jnana karmadi anavritam. Uttama bhakti should not be covered or obscured by karma or jnana. So if one practices yukta vairagya, then one can say that there's no covering of karma or jnana. Yukta vairagya means anashaktasya vishayat, without attachment. One uses things in Krishna's service. Nirbande Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagya Muchate. So if I use, without being attached to it, if I use something in Krishna's service, then there's no covering of karma by which I would want to enjoy, and no covering of jnana by which I would want to renounce, but only bhakti.
Small question. You, anushilanam. You said one of those words means cultivation. Is cultivation?
Anushilanam means cultivation.
Just together.
Anu means continuous. Anu means continuous. Shilanam means activity. Mm-hmm. So Srila Prabhupada and other acharyas have, well, I guess Srila Prabhupada on behalf of other acharyas has translated anushilanam as cultivation, involving the body, mind, and words.
Can we liken that to the haiku to your thumb?
That yes.
Unbroken is continuous.
Yes.
This one.
Yes.
Again, sir, Krishna, there's a flow. Continuous.
Yes. There are several important verses from Srimad Bhagavatam about bhakti. And Rupa Goswami has derived his definition from such verses. And that's one of the very important verses.
Is this on Yandi Vashita Shloka, the Lord Chaitanya is quoting Sushant Goswami before Akhilasimya Sindhu. So does that mean that this verse is like from Brahma, or is this Lord Chaitanya posted, or do you know about that?
Some verses were current at the time of Lord Chaitanya and Rupa Goswami, which they quoted, and which later were incorporated in the books of Rupa Goswami. But some devotees have suggested that Chaitanya Charitamrita does not record the exact words that Lord Chaitanya spoke. We don't know if he spoke in Bengali couplets. Mm-hmm. But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has conveyed the essence of what Lord Chaitanya said. So when Lord Chaitanya gave the definition of Uttama Bhakti to Rupa Goswami, we don't know if he used the words Anya Vilasita Sunya, but definitely he conveyed the purport or the meaning. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has incorporated many verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Substance, it's the same substance. So tomorrow's reading assignment, you can just read up to text 30. 1-8 deals a bit with bhakti, which we discussed in class, and it discusses a bit about Krishna's expansions. We also discussed the fact that Krishna, in the definition of bhakti, means Krishna and his expansions and his pure devotees and his paraphernalia. So that's the relationship. And tomorrow we'll discuss the superiority of bhakti, which includes the independence of bhakti from other processes, which is very important for us to understand.
The data of the devotion is stated that sadhana bhakti is divided on two parts, vaidhi prakanuga bhakti. Could you tell me what is the relationship between sadhana, vraganuga bhakti and bhava bhakti and pran bhakti, because you said that bhava bhakti is now under sadhana bhakti.
Yes. One can approach bhava bhakti either from vaidhi sadhana bhakti or raganuga sadhana bhakti. If one is following raganuga sadhana bhakti, he will develop bhava for Krishna in Vrindavan. And if he's following Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, he will develop bhava for Lakshmi Narayan or Sita Ram or some other form of Godhead in Vaikuntha. So they're parallel. Of course, the branching into Raganuga comes at an advanced stage, definitely after Anartha Nivritti and higher. But it's not that everyone who does Vaidhi Bhakti will do Raganuga Bhakti. You understand?
Raganuga is next step after Vaidhi?
No.
Raganuga can appear at an advanced stage of Vaidhi, but not everyone who reaches an advanced stage in Vaidhi develops Raganuga Bhakti. Because what is the qualification for entering Raganuga Bhakti? Do you know? That's the definition, but what qualifies you to enter Raganuga Bhakti?
Love.
Yes, greed. It doesn't say, the scripture doesn't say that by doing Vaidhi Bhakti for 1 year or one life or 10 lives or a million lives, that you will enter Raganuga Bhakti. Only if you have greed will you enter Raganuga Bhakti. And greed cannot be had by performing pious activities for millions and trillions of lives.
Can greed be developed at all by our efforts, or it has to depend on mercy from the Lord?
It does depend on mercy. But if we hear Krishna's pastimes, or if we see the beautiful form of the deity in the temple, and we have some spontaneous desire that I want to serve Krishna in a particular way, that is lobha, or Srila Prabhupada says, transcendental covetousness.
How does spontaneity increase?
By association of a Raganuga Vaishnava. Without the association of a Raganuga Vaishnava, it won't come.
That means some effort on our part is necessary.
We may or we may not. Even if we make efforts, we may not get such association. But if we serve faithfully, Krishna will make the arrangement.
Dependence.
Of course. How did we come in contact with our spiritual master? We didn't make any effort. Krishna has arranged. So Krishna wants us to come back to him, back to Godhead. And he makes arrangements. But certainly everything depends on mercy. Even to enter Vaidhi Bhakti, we need mercy. Yes?
Don't you see that there's an element of raga or spontaneity even within the Vaidhi sadhaka? Like someone may have some spontaneous desire for kirtan or this or that. So is this the raga element within the Vaidhi context? Not specifically raga, but the southern
That way, we should all have some spontaneous liking for some aspect of devotional service. That's true. I mean, pure Vaidhi Bhakti without any taste or any liking cannot exist. There must be some touch, like you said. But that's not exactly the same as Raganuga Bhakti. But we have to be patient and continue the classes on Vaidhi Bhakti, and in a very few days we will come to Raganuga Bhakti. Maybe if we do our Vaidhi Bhakti studies very well, we can go more quickly to Raganuga Bhakti. It won't take so long.
Another point, in this background, can you please explain the difference between this Kripa-siddho and Sadhana-siddho? We find examples there are that, for example, Shurpanakha did not have any Guru Kripa, did not have any Sadhana-siddho, but did, in order to satisfy her own lust in the dirtiest way, that even then she continued all the time to think of Ram, his beauty, his form, and everything. Thereby, he was doing some bhajan without doing bhajan. Is this real Kripa-siddhi?
Okay, I think we'll take this up later because the time is up. Actually, other devotees who have questions, if we don't have time at the end of the class, you can write them down, and I'll keep them in mind in the next class or when we come to the appropriate subject. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.